Return to Swiffer's podcast. Please subscribe.
Well, this is the time. The time to begin seeing my long dream be a reality. What is that? It is my Return of the King parody screenplay. Now, those that may be new, episode 10 of my podcast series was about why I made a Return of the King screenplay in a comical format. So go ahead and listen to that episode to get more context, but to be brief, it was during a time, it was almost over 20 years ago, and I just happened to come across a lot of screenplays online. And for me, a lot of the times I mishear lines of script or lyrics of a song, and I look up the words for them, and I'm like, oh, that's what they said, or that, you know, gets a little more context. That was just me. And so while I was perusing, I noticed that people had put up scripts for the Lord of the Rings films. And I was looking through one of them, and I just was like, hey, you know, it would have been kind of funny if in this scene, this character said this instead of that. And anyway, it sparked something. So I ended up creating a script, wrote it from start to finish of Return of the King. That's just what I preferred to do. Not to say I couldn't make the other two films comical in nature, and maybe in the future I would do that, but for now, it's the Return of the King, and yeah. So I took some notes down preparing for this because I needed to get my thoughts straight. So, brief history. The script is over 20 years old. About 70% of the script as it exists today, at this very moment, is from the original first draft. The other 30% has been modifications I've made over the years. And really, it's been something maybe, if you want to set some sort of frequency, maybe on a quarterly or biannual basis, I just cross my mind, go to the script and make some tweaks or just read, have a good laugh. You know, at least I find some of it funny. Some of it's pretty ridiculous, but anyway, I'll get to that later. But the screenplay is also very self-aware. It's aware of its absurdity. Its attempt to be comical. And that starts with the narrator. Now, the narrator's voice is very loosely influenced by the great Sir David Attenborough, the famous British broadcaster, biologist, you know, all those nature films. And in the beginning of my recording for this script, for the screenplay, I try to mimic his voice, not like overtly, but just trying to get the feel for his voice, the intensity, the drama, the feel for, you know, connecting with what, you know, you're viewing or hearing. But eventually turn it to something different. It's just the voice I chose to do. I didn't plan on it. I just let it happen. I'm like, this kind of feels good for a narrator to be loosely based off of not just Attenborough, but, you know, someone from the British Isles. Again, it's a measly attempt, so I have to add that disclaimer. Now, the narrator, he gradually becomes more comfortable in giving his opinions regarding the course of the story or the screenplay, which leads him to become agitated as minor problems, the same problems frequently occur, like a wrong voice actor speaks, or the tone of the scene doesn't match the words or how we know it in the film. Upset that the director doesn't wear pants, for example. He makes several mentions to that. And he does sometimes complain quite loudly about how his voice hurts. Doing the narrator voice is a different voice. It's deep in my throat, and I coughed a lot. I had to pause so many times because it just was hurting. And so you're going to make mention of that. And again, the editing out of the coughs or some pauses, I wanted it to be, you know, be part of the narrator's character. I wanted it to be, oh, this should have been taken out in editing, but it just adds more life to the script. It makes it more raw, kind of more real, if that makes sense. But anyway, the narrator, he also sometimes screams at someone in the studio. Like, for example, he's a couple of times becomes irate with the soundboard operator. So I have a tiny soundboard in my measly podcast equipment. And some characters have voice changes, or you do a voice over, and, you know, it changes into an echo. See, I just did that there. But he gets annoyed that they get it wrong, or they're too slow to change the voices, and so he takes over. Now, there are instances where a character misspeaks, or has to repeat a word, and he just points it out and makes them say it over again instead of editing it out. And honestly, selfishly, it saves on editing time. Just again, making kind of like a raw recording with minimal editing. So that's the narrator. And the narrator, I feel, is the true heart of this screenplay because he's the most human. He has a script, but he has his reservations with how it's being portrayed, and a few times he has to be chastened by the director, and you kind of hear his voice being in the distance. You know, it's like he's talking to someone next to him. Anyway, now the screenplay itself. It's in multiple recordings. It ended up being over 5.5 hours long. Not too dissimilar to the extended version of Return of the King, but because the narrator's speaking, that takes time. But I typically have like 3 to 5 second breaks between scenes, so you know that a new scene is going to be starting. And it helps to it helps to have seen the film. I'll just say that. It helps even more if you're a Tolkien fan and have watched the movie multiple times. And if you like just dry, stupid humor. That's what it is. That's my forte. It isn't for everybody. But I hope at least for Tolkien fans, it can give you a good laugh. Now, my opinion of the Lord of the Rings trilogy is that it is not infallible, but it is the closest films to perfection that has ever been created by man. Okay? There's certainly, you can nitpick things, and it's referenced in the screenplay. Some of the extended bits, like a handful I included, but it would have just made this even longer. And changes from the book, like certain characters taking the lines of other characters from the book, that is regularly pointed out. Because in hindsight, there's a few instances where I personally feel that wasn't necessary. Like Legolas narrating to Aragorn and Gimli about the dead men of Dunharrow and the Oath of Isildur. No. Even when I watch the film, I'm like, he said nothing of that sort. How the heck would he know? He was in Mirkwood. Anyway. Now, there's a plethora of nuances as well, because it can't be a comedy without that. But part of the parody is that some story points lack consistency. So, something may have happened in a scene, or maybe a few lines prior, and it's suddenly changed, the next time. I did that because I wanted to set that tone, not just of comedy, but it's just inconsistent. It's just a nonsensical screenplay. Like, you can understand the gist of the plot and everything. Like, it follows closely to the track of the film, but there's little details. For example, Arwen, of many characters, she assumes the characters of multiple individuals. And that's often inconsistent because sometimes the original character comes back. But anyway, the narrator's lines are frequently nonsensical when he describes how a person is speaking or their posture or while they're having a trait of dialogue with other characters. You know, they may be busy doing something else while that's happening, like playing a video game or doing their nails. I'm happy with how it was recorded. The screenplay itself, I have completely finished updating because I can't update it anymore. It's had 20 years of just updates. And going back to the beginning, about 70% is from the original draft. And it was made by a 19-year-old me. And so there's some obvious naivete in there. There's some minor potty talk, because who doesn't love a good fart joke? That's just... I couldn't remove that because I didn't want to take away from how I had made it. I did remove a decent amount, trying to make it a little more mature and not passable as, or passing as like a, oh, this is just another childish parody that's full of potty jokes and everything. It's like, I took a decent amount of it out, but I still kept some in because that's, come on, I'm a guy. Do I need to further explain myself? Maybe I've over-explained myself now. So, I'm going to be releasing this screenplay in segments. And all the voices are from me. They're nothing special. My dream is to have others do it. Now, that is a pipe dream within a pipe dream. And I assume when pigs fly through the said pipe in that said pipe dream, then there's the slightest potential that someone would want to create, bring this to life. At least, it's not a visual. No, this is an audio-only experience. Kind of like the old radio shows before television. Something that you can just listen to. You can listen to in the car, in your home, or at whatever convenience. And just enjoy a good laugh, good eye roll, and being like, you know what, that would have been kind of funny if they changed it this way or whatever. But it'll be, anyway, I'll be releasing this in segments. I don't know how many. I recorded it in like 8, but I may combine a couple. They're going to be long. Like, I've had a handful of long podcast episodes. I mean, I'm not much of a speaker, so, you know, don't count on my podcast being, you know, these 1-2 hours. Granted, lots of people do interviews. I'm a terrible people person, so I doubt that's going to happen anytime soon. If it does, it'll probably be a family member who I'm more comfortable with. Sorry, you heard that. That's me drinking my Coder Mountain Dew because it's delicious. I'm currently editing the other segments, just trying to remove some of the static. I don't know why it happens, but occasionally it happens. I kept some of it in just to add to the frustration of the narrator that his screenplay isn't going the way that he wants to, that there's constant interruptions. So I'll stop talking, and you've got the whole intro of what to expect, at least to an extent. You have to listen to the thing. But, listen, laugh, yell, share. That would be fantastic. This took a lot of work, a lot of time. It took a year to make the screenplay, and it is has been something I have been incredibly hesitant on sharing. But I feel this is now or never, right? So thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy part one of the Return of the King parody screenplay.
The history of Gollum, or Sméagol's transformation to Gollum, or how he killed someone on his birthday. We see a young hobbit, Sméagol, gently fingering some cards, and as the camera zooms out, we see a man wanting to be in the film, but is quickly shot. We also see that he and his cousin, Deagle, are sitting in a small boat on the River Anduin playing Go Fish, while being surrounded by the lush green of a movie set. Suddenly, a look of excitement comes to Deagle's face.
Sméagol! I've got it! I've got a fish, Smeag!
They both laugh, Sméagol watching happily as his cousin struggles with his catch.
Sméagol! Caron! Caron, 2 7s! Great! How about 3 aces?
No, I caught a fish.
Oh, I broke wind.
As Deagle hears that, he immediately jumps into the water. With a look of concern on his face, Sméagol watches his cousin's hat as it bobs up and down in the water, but soon disintegrates and sees the water turning dark green. Panicking,
Deagle, where are you? We have not finished the game.
We are underwater, and a big fish, caught in a hook, pulls Deagle along the river floor. Deagle finds himself in a ridiculous situation involving a ring of power. Not the one you are thinking of, it was a toilet bowl ring that had a magically explosive effect on its user, a sandwich from the refrigerator, and 19 cents at a discount price. Anyway, Deagle realizes that he is still underwater. He proceeds to swim, and eventually he notices a glimmer of gold in the river bottom, which catches his eye. He closes his hand over the sand surrounding what we see is a golden ring. An actual ring, one you put on your finger. As he gets to the surface, he peers into the shimmering water. Then, suddenly remembering something, he opens his clenched fist, gazing at the shiny ring in awe. In the background, a bunch of birds leave the surrounding trees hurriedly, and Sméagol hurries to his cousin, laughing.
Deagle, Deagle, I just had the...
Whoa! Sméagol sees the ring in Deagle's hand.
Nice ring. Can I have it?
This ring is the right fit for my nose.
Great!
He attempts to insert the ring into his nose, clearly not a professional piercer of any stretch of the fantastical imagination. Sméagol stands behind his cousin's back for a moment, eyeing the muddy ring. Slowly.
Give us that, Deagle, my love.
Deagle closes his fist and turns to face Sméagol.
Why? I got you a Cabbage Patch Hobbit. This is mine.
Because it's my birthday and I want it. And besides, that dog calls me nameses.
Dejectedly, forget you! The smile on Sméagol's face fades in an instant, and in a sudden motion, he snatches at the ring. In the background comes the eerie call of the ring. Sméagol continues to snatch at the ring, and they circle around each other. Smeagol's attempts becoming more desperate and violent. At last, they are openly fighting for the ring. Sméagol bites at Deagle's arm, and the ring falls to the ground. They hit at each other desperately. Then stuff happens. They make out. Sméagol kills him and is happy. Feeling pretty good about himself, after killing his lifelong friend and cousin, Sméagol says,
"My precious!"
As he slips the ring onto his finger, he vanishes from sight. As the scene changes, we see an older, more twisted form of Sméagol, scrambling over rocks, agony on his face.
"They cursed us, murderer."
We see Sméagol looking more pitiful still, huddled against amongst the shadows, and biting his thumb while gazing at the ring as though unable to tear his eyes from it. From this point onward, Smeagol's voice began to drastically change, one from a
innocent riverfolk hobbit to that of a masculine sound, as I am unable to mimic the great Andy Serkis's voice. Here goes.
Murderer, they called us. They cursed us and drove us away in our own taxi. Gollum, Gollum, Gollum.
Smeagol kneels out in the open in the cold dreariness of the rain. In the dark by the riverside, Smeagol catches a fish with his bare hands. The fish exclaims, "Oh!" As it wriggles in his hands, he brings it to his mouth and sinks his rotten, stinky teeth into it.
Fish, that we only wish, so juicy, sweet, so plump, and neat, so, so furry and bleak.
We see Smeagol in the wilderness, looking more and more like the creature Gollum. Finally, he crawls into the dark tunnels of the Misty Mountains.
And we forgot the taste of water, the sound of bums, and the softness of the draft. We even forgot our own smell.
Smeagol's bony figure squats in the caves, the ring in his hands. He closes his eyes, and then reopens them, closing the ring in his fist. He then farts, killing all the orcs in the area.
My precious is gone, how nasty Baggins is! Give it... Oh, wrong book, we apologize.
The days are growing darker. More darker. So darker, that it's making the scene title too long. In a small cave-like shelter, Sam lies sleeping in his elven cloak. Nearby, Frodo is sitting up, handling the chain of his life's deeds around his neck. He glances in Sam's direction, then takes out the ring and fingers it, breathing heavily. As he hears Gollum approaching, he puts it away hastily. Gollum peeks into the stony alcove.
Wake up! Wake up!
Gollum shakes Sam violently awake, who now is already awake.
Wake up, sleepies. We must go. Yes, we must go at once.
Sam sits up and looks at Frodo's blank face.
Oh, I don't think I can get up. Hey, haven't you had any sleep, Mr. Frodo?
Frodo is passed out and in cardiac arrest. He can shake his head.
I've gone out too much.
Sam stands up and looks at the surroundings.
Must be getting late. That darn Rosie. She'll pay for that. Supposed to wake me up.
No, it isn't Rosie. It isn't Rosie, Sam. It's midday. The days are growing smarter. Funnier. Hysterical, being spelled with an I. Forgettable.
Darker! The earth shakes and rumbles as in the distance. Sam makes a glare and sneer at Gollum, who apparently aged 100 years after that ghastly mission.
Come on, must go. No time. We can't miss Jerry Springer. It's an all-new love's triangle. Arwen and Eowyn battle for Aragorn.
Not before Mr. Frodo's had something to eat, if he can after your generous release.
Impatiently.
No time to lose, silly. On in 10 minutes.
For some reason, Legolas enters the scene.
Can I say something?
All, referring to all of Middle-earth, but principally the main and minor characters appearing in this story.
No!
Sam walks to Frodo, goes through his bag, and hands Frodo a pack of lean pockets.
Here, some lean pockets.
What about you?
Hastily.
No, I'm not hungry. At least not for lemmas bread.
Frodo, lovingly disgusted with increased and fiery disdain.
Sam, we gave them to Arwen. Have a pocket.
In an undertone.
All right. We don't have that much left. They come two in a box. We must be careful if we're going to run out. Besides, having them heated by Gollum's posterior makes them taste a little funny. Anyways.
Nodding to the lean pocket in Frodo's hand.
You go ahead and eat that, Mr. Frodo.
Frodo takes a bite of the lembas... lean pockets.
I've rationed it. Should be enough.
Puzzled.
For what?
Sam replies in a matter-of-fact tone.
The Super Bowl.
The hobbits look at each other, a trace of excitement playing on Frodo's face. The scene changes and we see the hobbits continue their journey, Gollum leading them with a portable TV watching Jerry Springer. However, the signal is too unclear for clarity.
Come, hobbitses. Very close now. Very close to Mordor. No safe places here. Hurry! Must find Cirith Ungol Towers' to get a better transmissions.
How hobbits eat, among other things. Some distance away, Gandalf, Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli, and some of the horse-riding people ride through Fangorn Forest, chopping down trees as they go. We see their position in the forest from above, and not too far away is Isengard, Hotel and Casino, almost in ruins. Merry and Pippin sit on the walls, eating a wonderful rotisserie salmon and smoking his bones. Pippin says quite delightfully,
I feel like I'm back at the casino after a big fat paycheck.
Merry retorts, pointedly with a tone of saucy mocking, only you've never had a big fat paycheck. Both laugh. As they see Gandalf and their friends emerge from the woods, Merry hops to his feet, and Pippin raises his tankard. Quite drunkenly,
Welcome, my lords, to Isengard Hotel and Casino, where Middle-earth seems like a fuzzy bee with petals of strength.
Gimli observes, You young rascals, you tremendously in a pile of great forget around the a merry hunt you've led us on, and now we find you feasting and smoking. Pippin retorts quite proudly,
We are sitting on a field of victory, enjoying a few well-earned comforts.
Merry blows out a cloud of smoke in agreement. Pippin continues with pride,
The salted wizard is particularly good.
Salted wizard!
He looks up and down at Gandalf while licking his lips. Gandalf proceeds to shake his head violently.
Hobbits, so wonderful and unbearable.
He starts to sweat.
Is it hot out here, or is it just me?
Merry points to Gandalf's jeans. Yes, he's wearing jeans.
Your pants are on fire.
Gandalf says a spell and they are put out. Everyone now keeps their distance from him.
Anyway, we're under orders from Treebeard, who has taken over management of Isengard Hotel and Casino.
Gandalf and the others are riding towards the slots and greeted by several beautiful women. Gandalf turns one into a goat after he repeatedly told them to go away, because he had a love interest already. Next comes in Treebeard, and says, like a tree,
Young Master Gandalf, I'm glad you've come. Tokens and cards, slots and roulette I can master. But there's a wizard to manage here, locked in his room.
Actually, Pip and I ate him, so no one has to worry.
How did you manage to cook and eat him?
Pippin replies quite pompously,
We bribed him with a popsicle of many colours. That was after Frodo and Sam left.
Bruh! Gimli retorts angrily.
They were here!
Pippin, pompously once again.
Yeah, they got bored and needed some excitement.
Gandalf, being quite disappointed with his inability to make porridge from rum and plexiglass.
No, I would have sensed it. Can I say something?
No, Legolas! Merry and Pippin are now feeling under the weather and head to the local outhouse. Sounds of pain and joy, but a sense of uneasiness spreads through the land. Several flushes are heard. They then come out quite composed, a little sore, and are ready to leave. Treebeard is seen smiling.
The filth of Saruman is washing away. Trees will come back to live here.
Pippin, sitting on a horse behind Aragorn, sees something in the water. He jumps down to get it.
Young trees, wild trees, firm trees, large trees, medium-sized trees. There seems to be enough fertilizer, courtesy of our small hobbits.
Aragorn, upon seeing Pippin leap from his horse...
Pippin!
Pippin sinks his hands into the water and lifts a heavy globe that we recognize as the Palantir of Saruman, a large MP3 player which has over 1 million songs. Treebeard, astounded by the mutinous rout of his... Wait, what?
Bless my bark! Does it have Stairway to Heaven?
Gandalf proceeds to reach toward Pippin.
Peregrin Took, I'll take that, my lad.
But I want to see if...
Now!
Pippin wades toward Gandalf and then glances back down at the Palantir. Gandalf, quite impatiently, says,
Quickly now!
Pippin hands the Palantir to Gandalf, who hastily wraps it in his robes and smiles. Pippin watches Gandalf as he rides away, warning to eat him too. Gandalf is seen muttering,
Now I can listen to in sync.
From a distance, the company can hear Gandalf say, Bye, bye, bye.
Please, can I say something?
No, Legolas!
Well, can I? After all, I am...
Shut up, Arwen!
Celebration at the Golden Hall of Medusold, now with Rugby. Gandalf, with the others keeping their distance, ride across the plains of Rohan towards Edoras. The camera pans around the great mound on which it is situated, and we see that the Lady Eowyn stands on the steps of the Golden Hall, bungee cord attached, gazing into the distance from the summit to the ground. That night, inside the Golden Hall, King Theoden stands before the people of Rohan.
Tonight, we remember those who gave their blood to defend this country.
He raises his goblet upside down.
Hail the victorious dead!
The people of Rohan scream in unison.
Hail!
Hail commences to fall, injuring dozens. We see Aragorn holding a tankard. After a pause, he brings it ever so solemnly to his lips. Later, we see the people of Rohan celebrating. Holding a goblet, Eowyn walks to Aragorn and throws it at him.
Westu Aragorn Hal, you piece of...
Aragorn catches the cup from her and drinks from it. As Eowyn watches him, he takes a pile of food and spreads it across her face. Aragorn then paces back and passes the goblet back to her, and walks away. Theoden joins Eowyn as he leaves, football in hand. Or is it rugby ball? Anyway, Theoden says dejectedly,
I am happy for you. He is a horrible man.
Eowyn begins to smile.
You are both horrible men.
Theoden nods in agreement.
It was not Theoden of Rohan who led our people to victory.
Eowyn watches her uncle, the smile on her face, fading. Théoden, realizing what a dweeb he sounded like,
Ah, don't listen to me. You are dumb, and tonight is for you.
A faint smile flickers across Eowyn's charred face. They both rush outside with a few riders and commence the rugby competition of the West Fold. Further away, Merry and Pippin are dancing on a table, tankards in hand. Merry and Pippin sing like a couple of drunk, worthless hobbits. A song I shall not attempt to sing. Needless to say, it's about a green dragon and a bucket of ale. The crowd claps and shouts, throwing daggers and spears and chairs as Merry leans backwards, doing a full matrix move. But Pippin isn't so fortunate. Standing off to one side, Gandalf laughs and claps and is sweating profusely, and is soon joined by Aragorn, who still does not feel comfortable to be any closer. Aragorn mumbling with mediocrity.
No news of Frodo.
Gandalf speaking like Gandalf would in a situation like this.
No word. Nothing. Zippo. Cinch. Nada.
Reassuringly, Aragorn replies,
We have time. Every day Frodo moves closer to Mordor. Gandalf glances hard and fast and strong and prickly towards Aragorn. Do we know that? He may be under our noses for all we know. He could have destroyed the ring already and is in Hawaii. We know he was in Isengard. No telling where he might be now. Inquisitive, hot, unbearable hobbit, at least.
What does your heart tell you?
Gandalf is silent and watches Aragorn, who's getting rather uncomfortable, causing a little smile rising to his lips.
That Frodo is alive. But not for long. He will die.
Softly, as though to himself.
Yes. Yes, he will die.
You know, I saw Frodo...
Shut up, Legolas! Once the Hobbit Scissors are dead and other adventures. It is night time and Frodo and Sam are asleep. Gollum is a few yards away conspiring with his OCD other self. If you've noticed my voice mildly changes, it's because my throat is screaming in agony.
Too risky, thieves.
With increasing anger.
They stole it from us. Kill them, kill them, kill them both.
With a scream, he comes to his senses.
Shh, quiet. Mustn't wake them. Mustn't ruin it now.
Gollum crawls down from where he was sleeping and makes his way to a little pool of water. With worry in his heart and in his tone.
But they knows. They knows. They suspects us. Our guess is given away.
Smeagol sits on the edge of the pool and he sees Gollum look back at him from the gently rippling H2O.
What's it saying, my precious? My love, my forever, my eternity? Is Smeagol losing his nerve? No, not, never. It's just our farts aren't killing them.
In protest!
Smeagol hates nasty hobbitses. Smeagol wants to see them... dead? And we will. Smeagol did it once. He can do it again. With just a whiff, he could wipe out of town.
Flashback of Smeagol strangling Deagle at the riverbank.
It's ours! Ours! Mine! Forever mine! We must get the precious! We must get it back, so I can stop talking to myself. Patience! Patience, my love. First, we must lead them to her.
Arwen enters the room.
You mean me?
Shut up! Not you! Her! We lead them to the winding stairs of her abode. Yes, the stairs, and then... up, 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 up the stairs we go to the fun places, and then we come to... the tunnel.
Creepishly, honestly true.
And when they go in, there's no going out. She's always hungry. She always needs to feed. She must eat. All she gets... is filthy Smeagol leftovers. And they don't taste very nice, do they, precious? No, not very nice at all, my love. She hungers for sweeter meats.
Farther away, Sam is waking up, slowly opening his eyes, silent, as he listens.
Deer meat! And when she throws away the bones and empty clothes, then we will find it.
Screeching in delight!
And take it for me!
Slurping incognito for us. Apologetically.
Yes, we meant for us.
Arwen appears and interjects.
But I've never eaten any orcs before.
Angrily now, Gollum screams.
Would you please leave?
Arwen is seen crying.
Fine. All I wanted was to say more things.
Legolas enters the room.
Me too.
Gollum. Gollum.
Oh, that sounded weird. You both were given lines and scenes that were not yours to begin with. Take it up with the director.
Smeagol scratches his head and then Gollum's head.
What?
Gollum rolls his eyes.
Nothing. The precious will be ours once the hobbitses are dead.
Gollum drops a stone into the pool, and as the reflection in the water becomes still again, Gollum's eyes are met by Sam's. Sam hits Gollum in the head with a pot, then a 2x4, then pushes a boulder on him, then severs off all his limbs, sending them flying. Sam, at his wits' beginning,
"You treacherous little, and I'm gonna..." And after that, with a ton of...
In the background, we can hear Jerry, Jerry, Jerry! Gollum despairingly,
"Arg, no, master!"
Frodo awakes from his sleep when he hears Gollum screams. He hurries to his side. Frodo, quite passionately,
"No, Sam, leave him alone. He is my friend, a much better friend than you will ever be."
Frodo pulls Sam away from Gollum, who is moaning on the ground. Sam, quite angrily,
"I order from his own mouth. He means to murder us. Separately."
Gollum, with a sarcastically delicious tone,
"Never! Smeagol wouldn't break up such a lovely relationship."
Quite annoyed, Frodo replies,
"Dude, we're not gay. If that's what you're implying, you're thinking of Gandalf and Pippin. Now they're gay."
Far, far away, we can hear a yell sounding like it is coming from Pippin.
"I'm not gay!"
Gollum presses his hand against his head and screams as he sees blood on it from Sam's abuse.
"He means he's a mean hobbit. A fat hobbit who hates Smeagol and makes up nasty lies."
Sam, quite hungrily,
"You miserable little maggot, I'll throw another boulder on you."
Frodo pulls at Sam's hand, holding him back as Gollum scrambles away from him. While under immense pressure from the president, Frodo now screams,
"Sam!"
Now confused, but why, Sam says,
"Call me a liar. You're a liar, both of you! You said we were forever, Mr. Frodo!"
Gollum screams, hiding behind a gangling tree. Frodo makes Sam face him. Frodo, while licking a spoon covered with hummus,
"We scare him off. We're lost.
We don't know where our relationship lies now."
Sam, in regard to all the Martians listening,
"I don't care. I can't do it, Mr. Frodo. I won't wait around for him to break our friendship. I'm your protector."
Now angrily bittersweet, Frodo says,
"I'm not sending him away."
Sam, now speechless with words,
"You don't see it, do you? He's a villain. He'll always be my first best friend, Mr. Frodo."
"I know, Sam, I know. Trust me. You will too if Gollum or Smeagol dies before you do."
Sam lowers his face. Frodo, motioning for Smeagol to follow him,
"Come, Smeagol."
"Can I come?"
"No!" Gollum crawls past Sam, fear in his eyes, then takes the hand of Frodo. As they begin to walk, Gollum looks back at Sam, his scared expression suddenly replaced the look of malice. Sam's eyes narrow, but he says nothing. I saw him, and I saw you, and you, and the lion. It is night. Aragorn is walking outside the Golden Hall, his pipe in his hands. He turns to his left and sees a cloaked figure gazing out to Mordor. Aragorn then makes his way to him, and as the figure turns to face him, we see that it is Legolas, who is crying. He mutters about his sadness of not having any lines thus far in the movie that originally belonged to other people. He begins.
"The stars are veiled."
Aragorn stands beside him with a hint of malice.
"Something stirs in the east. A sleepless malice."
They glance at each other.
"The eye of the enemy is moving."
Inside a room only dimly lit, Gandalf and the hobbits are sleeping, with some random extras on the sides. We see Pippin awake, and after a moment's hesitation, he gets to his feet and tiptoes away from Gandalf, who was apparently talking about him in his sleep.
"What are you doing? He's not so bad when you get to know him."
Pippin turns but gives no answer to his friend.
As he stands beside the Palantir player, shock comes into his face, for Gandalf comes into his mind, remembering all the boy bands he heard from the casino in Meduseld. Merry then shrieks in a loud whisper, "Pippin!" Pippin glances at Gandalf with the uttermost disgust. Gandalf is still talking about him in his sleep, with a slight grin on his face. Worriedly, Merry says again, "Pippin!" Merry sits up in his bed as Pippin swaps the Palantir player. The wizard mutters his name, and the hobbit shudders in disgust, but Gandalf is still asleep. Quickly, Pippin takes the Palantir back towards Merry.
"Pippin, are you mad? You could break it! Think of all those great songs!"
"I just want to hear my song, just one more time."
The song that plays is "Home is Behind," sung and performed by Pippin's real-life character, Billy Boyd. Pippin appears happy, thinking of the Shire, sweat glistening on his face. Merry, at this time, is panicking buckets.
"Put it back. It is too good for you."
Breathing in satisfaction, Pippin raises the volume. By now, all the people in the room are awake, but then fall back asleep, because I would totally not match up with Gandalf waking up to Pippin's agony while holding the Palantir. Anyway, everyone happily screams, "Turn that crap off! It sucks!" Merry then chimes in, "Pippin, it is true. You sing like a fairy." The smile on the hobbit's face soon transforms to anger. But sooner to fears the lidless eye, lidless eye. That appears better. Anyway, this random eyeball appears in the Palantir. Pippin realizes it is also a visual walkie-talkie and tries to draw back, remembering his past friendship with Sauron's sister, but is unable to take his eyes off the great eyeball of Mordor. He starts to violently shake, like a tremor passing through a bathroom. Merry screams,
"No, Pippin! It is not worth it! You dumped his sister for a good reason!"
Merry watches in fascinated terror as his friend struggles with a glowing Palantir player. We see Legolas and Aragorn still outside the Golden Hall, playing hopscotch. Legolas turns to look at Aragorn, alarmed and happy he has a line in the script.
"He is here."
Back in the Hall of Meduseld, we hear the voice of Sauron's sister, Saurona.
"I love you."
Merry is now worried with indigestion.
"Pippin, do not listen to her."
Pippin jumps up, holding the Palantir as if it were glued to his hands. We see a type of acid trip slow motion as the hobbit struggles with a flaming stone falling on his back. The voice of Sauron's sister Saurona whispers poems of eternal love in the background, and Pippin cries in comical agony. Merry, now with great desperation of both soul and body,
"Stop! Stop! Help! Gandalf! Sauron's sister is trying to steal away your hobbit!"
Finally, Gandalf stirs from his sleep and springs into action.
Aragorn and Legolas rush into the room as well.
Merry is now panicking with tater tots in his outstretched hand.
"Help him! Please help him!"
Merry proceeds to jump in a toilet. Aragorn snatches the Palantir from Pippin's hands but falls on his knees, taken over by Sauron's masculine power. Legolas tries to help, but everyone throws him out of the room. It was such a lovely time. Finally, the stone drops from Aragorn's hands. He is in a daze, which only occurs when he sees true love. Not really. He just starts rolling around like a little puppy on its first day in the... Anyway, as it rolls towards Gandalf, he hastily casts his clothes over it. Merry, yelling from the other room,
"Pippin!
staring at Gandalf. Oh, please put them back on. Merry throws up, as does all of Rohan. Gandalf, with pride and irresistibility that only an old naked man who claims to be a wizard can say with absolute certainty, magnanimity, and the delicacy of an Italian sausage, pasta, cheesy gordita crunch. Fool of a Took. Gandalf sees Pippin lying on the floor, his eyes open, staring into nothingness. He hurries to the hobbit, anxiously, gently pushing Merry aside into oncoming traffic. The wizard takes Pippin's hand into his own and presses his other hand on the hobbit's forehead. He whispers something that is not worth repeating and strokes Pippin's cheek like he's a little lamb. He moves in for a kiss, but Pippin finally opens his eyes, rejecting the kiss. Gandalf, now with great disappointment in his beard.
Look at me!
Gandalf, forgive me, I am not ready to kiss. Pippin makes to close his eyes, but Gandalf stops him.
In due time, look at me. What do you see?
A tree. There was a white tree on a beach of white sand. It was full of beautiful women. Because I like women, Gandalf. In a flash, we see the beach that Pippin spoke of. The air was burning. Gollum had released too much.
Palm Beach? Is that what you saw?
I saw him. I could hear his sister's voice in my head.
And what did you tell her? That we are now a couple? Speak!
Pippin shakes his head aggressively against the wall. She asked me how I was. I do not answer. She heard me weeping. He continues. She threw all my stuff out of my old room in Barad-dûr.
What did you tell her about our engagement on the ring?
Now Pippin, angrily and with extreme prejudice juice, we are not getting married! The parting of Merry and Pippin and the turn-on of Gandalf. The next day, Gandalf is having a romantic conversation with Theoden about the night's events on the balcony of Meduseld. Aragorn, Legolas, who is being placed inside a cage, and Gimli are also present.
There was no lie in Pippin's passionate eyes, Gandalf began,
and he continues.
A fool, but a remarkably... Remarkably edible fool he remains. Can I try that again direct? There was no lie in Pippin's passionate eyes. A fool, but a remarkably edible fool he remains.
Farther away sits Pippin with Merry, Pippin looking quite disgusted and embarrassed by his conduct, unbecoming of a poker dealer. Gandalf continues. Most assuredly.
He told Sauron nothing of Frodo and the ring. Only love that could not be had. We have been strangely fortunate. Pippin saw in the Palantir a glimpse of the enemy's plan.
Gandalf begins to peel an orange and cast pieces of the peel at the character's elbows and pinkies.
Sauron moves to strike the city of Minas Tirith. His defeat at Helm's Deep showed our enemy one thing. He knows the Elendil has come forth. Men are not as weak as he supposed. There is courage still, strength enough perhaps to challenge him. Sauron fears this.
Realizing what he said!
Actually, that was four or five things. Oh, we old wizards, we just...
All the others are silent but nod in agreement and listen as Gandalf continues. With most passion and disdain...
He will not risk the peoples of Middle-earth uniting under one banner. He will raise Minas Tirith to the ground before he sees a king return to the throne of men. If the beacons of Gondor are lit, Rohan must be ready for war, like the beacons of my heart, to Pippin's heart.
Theoden now, acting like a pure douche material is about to be spoken by this old dude. Wait, that didn't make sense. Let me start over. Theoden, in an attitude of pure douche material, is about to speak
by this old dude Gandalf. That was a terrible sentence. Tell me, why should we ride to the aid of those who did not come to ours? All are silent.
Aragorn turns to look at Theoden.
What do we owe Gondor? Aragorn, now beside himself. They gave you your friggin' lands, you ungrateful pile of waste, because heaven forbid Rohan should spare some help. He turns to Gandalf! So I'll go.
No.
They must be warned.
They will be.
Gandalf walks to where Aragorn is standing, who now moves further away with the now caged Legolas and Gimli by his side.
You must come to Minas Tirith by another road.
Whispering.
Follow the river and look for the black ships.
He winks at Aragorn! Aragorn meets Gandalf's eyes with confusion before the wizard turns to face the others.
Understand this. Things are now in motion that cannot be undone. If the ring is destroyed, Sauron will fall. But if Sauron regains the ring, then his victory will be so complete that none can foresee the end of it while his world lasts. I ride to Minas Tirith.
He turns to look at Pippin with most affection.
And I will not be going alone, not without an escort.
He smiles and creepily chuckles at Pippin, who is by now halfway out the door trying to call a cab. In the next scene, we are outside. Isn't that awesome? Gandalf, followed by the two hobbits, is making his way to the stables of Edoras. You have no idea how excited I...
Gandalf replies, of all the inquisitive hobbits Peregrine took, you are the worst. Hot, but foolish. Hurry, hurry.
Merry follows Gandalf and Pippin runs behind him, trying to catch up, confusion on his face.
Where are we going? Why did you look? Why do you always have to look?
Pippin, trying to understand.
I don't know. I can't help it. I tried to resist the temptation to drink apple juice, but I just...
Say no more, please. You never can.
Holy almost. I'm sorry, all right?
They stop and Merry turns to look at Pippin. A serious look on the other guy's face.
I won't do it again. Don't you understand? Merry begins. The enemy thinks you have the ring. And Gandalf won't be satisfied until you're his.
The same goes for Sauron's sister. Pippin stares at Merry. Frown on his face!
She's going to be looking for you, Pip. I have to get you out of here.
Slowly, as though already knowing the answer.
And you're coming with me?
Merry doesn't answer because he's mute, but follows Gandalf into the stables. Pippin, now with curious anger.
Merry, don't turn your back on me! Merry, don't turn your back on me!
That sounds better. Merry, now with ignorance unchained.
Come on!
Pippin follows Merry into the stables, and Gandalf lifts Pippin up by his bum to sit on Shadowfax's backside.
How far is Minas Tirith?
Emphatically, Gandalf replies.
3 days riding together in perfect harmony, as the Nazgul flies.
Pippin frowns. Gandalf, sternly and lovingly.
And you'd better hope we don't have one of those on our tail. No one will break our love.
Merry steps forward and pushes a leather pouch into Pippin's hands.
Gently, Merry says.
Here! Something for the road!
Pippin, now deaf, as well as half the listeners to this podcast. The loss of the Longbottom leaf. I know, you've run out. You smoke too much, Pip. Don't let Gandalf have any. It makes him irritable. But we'll see each other as soon. Won't we?
Merry glances at Gandalf, who appears jealous of the gift.
Won't we, Merry? I don't know. Probably not until the wedding.
I'm not marrying Gandalf! Pippin glares at Merry as though filled with rage as Gandalf gets up to sit behind him. Merry takes a few steps back and speaks softly, his voice breaking. Pippin puts a pillow between himself and Gandalf, who doesn't understand.
I don't know what's going to happen, Pip.
Gandalf makes to leave. Merry!
Run, Shadowfax. Show us the meaning of haste. You slow us down, I'll turn you into a newt.
Merry! Pippin screams as he exits the scene. Shadowfax gallops out of the stables and Merry runs after them. He climbs up to the watchtower, Aragorn running after him. Aragorn clicks the scissors in his hand and wipes a comb with the other.
Merry, time for your daily foot shave. Where are you going?
High up on the watchtower, Merry commands a magnificent view of all the lands around and decides to build his home along the slope of a great hill close to town. But his eyes are focused on the single white figure, galloping swiftly away over a waterfall. He watches in silence as the horse and its riders vanish into the distant foam of the river. Aragorn gets out his razor and towel.
All right, which foot should we start on? Right or left?
Legolas, calling from his cage.
Let me help, Aragorn. I can...
Renewed shall be the blade that was already broken. Wait.
Let's see, I'm on page
19. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm already on scene 8. I suppose I should have prefaced each scene title with the scene number and say, for example, scene 1. The history of Gollum, etc. I don't need to...
See, that was on page 19. Scrolling down. Page 19.
Scene 8. Renewed shall be the blade that was already broken because of Sauron, who was very bad. We're in a forest where the leaves are the colors of autumn. Traveling in single file, some on horseback and some walking. The elves move in silence, going slower than a herd of charging snails. We see people alongside shouting insults and throwing water balloons at them, calling them cowards and scaredy cats. Among them is the Lady Arwen, on the back of a white horse, Asphaloth the Green. Elrond, voiceover.
Take her by the most dangerous road imaginable. I have sent word to all available orcs in the vicinity to attack whenever possible. A prison ship lays anchored in the Grey Havens. It awaits to carry her across the sea to Tol Alcatraz. At last, we will have a film without added dialogues or scenes for a character that appeared so infrequently in the book, The Last Journey of Arwen Undaunted.
As we trace the journey of the elves, Arwen investigates the forest, and among the trees a small boy runs slowly, as though in slow motion. Even in slow motion, the boy moves faster than the elves. As Arwen turns to look at the boy, the movie is over. He runs into a pavilion to a grey-haired Aragorn with outstretched arms. Aragorn takes the boy into his arms and spins him around and around and around and around and throws him over the city walls, both laughing merrily. Arwen watches, her eyes glistening with tears. As Aragorn waves goodbye to his son, the young boy turns in Arwen's direction, meeting her eyes. As Arwen watches in horror as he gets ever so closer to the ground, she sees the Evenstar around his neck. He continues to stare at his mother until a single tear rolls down her cheek. And he I kid myself, crack myself. Oh, I'm just one of those. And he becomes only a smear image of his father. See what I did? Not a mere image, a smear. See that play on word smear?
Image of his father once he hits the ground. Yeah, not so funny once I say it out loud.
She closes her eyes, vomits, and cries. In a flashback, Elrond.
says.
There is nothing for you here. Only death.
Flashback over? Arwen opens her eyes and the vision fades. A dark-haired elf approaches. Held elf? Learn how to speak! A dark-haired elf approaches her horse and looks up at her, her eyes filled with sympathy and concern.
Lady Arwen, we cannot delay.
Arwen looks down at the elf, who has a 5 o'clock shadow, even though elves can't grow facial hair. Arwen says,
Are you sure you're an elf?
No, I'm an extra.
Then in disgrace, Arwen turns Asphaloth back and rides back along the path from which they had traveled. I must remind you, listeners, that making this voice burns my throat, but I am diligent anyway. The elf The elf screams,
"My lady, if you leave, well, nothing will happen to me. Right on, scene stealer."
Ooh, a real zinger! I never knew the elves were masters of comedy. In a golden sunrise, a green horse gallops into an emptied Rivendell, where Arwen's father, Lord Elrond Eyebrows, sits alone. As he hears the hooves, he starts in excitement as well in surprise to see if a rider came to announce that Arwen was either imprisoned or killed, and makes his way to the entrance. Hurrying towards him, Arwen throws her velvet robe to the ground. She pulls out a claymore and kills Elrond's cat, Fudge.
Tell me what you have seen.
Arwen, you killed Fudgy.
He comes to his senses.
You should be dead. That spear would have skewered a wild boar.
Gandalf interjects.
Wait, what? How does he interject? He's halfway across, but... Anyway, Gandalf says, I think there is more to this hobbit than meets the eye.
Arwen is met by a question mark.
So that was weird. You have the gift of foresight. What did you see?
Elrond, while stealthily pulling out a dagger from behind his shoe.
I looked into your future and I saw death.
There is also life.
Not while I am here, sweetie.
You saw there was a child. You saw my son.
Elrond turns away from his daughter, looking sadly around at his silent surroundings, clenching his fists, holding back the rage.
That future is almost gone. Deal with it.
But it is not lost.
Elrond sits down, rage in his eyes, but tenderness in his toe.
Nothing is certain. Be gone!
Arwen, now kneeling in front of her father,
some things are certain. If I leave him now, I will regret it for the rest of the week.
After a pause,
it is time.
What? Speak louder.
It is time.
Thank you. Gandalf is somehow still in the area and screams,
The board is set. The pieces are moving.
Elrond quite dejectedly.
What? Get out!
We see a hooded Arwen walking to the ledge upon which the shards of Narsil are placed.
Ooh,
this says Arwen voiceover.
From the ashes a fire shall be woken. A light from the shadow shall spring. Renewed shall be blade that was broken.
The flashback continues from the last time, or picks up from where we left off. Isildur cuts the ring from the hand of Sauron. The voiceover continues on top of a flashback. Or the flashback's over. Arwen voiceover, she says.
The crownless again shall be king.
All of a sudden, Bilbo appears, now wrinkled beyond hope.
Hi.
Arwen begins to chant.
Nino Hithaglir last o Bethdar. Rimo Lyre Hithaglir. Lastobeth Remodine Santa Claus.
By now, Bilbo is consumed by the river and drowns! How horrific is this parody? Meanwhile, back in Rivendell,
beside Arwen's bed, next to her puppy, Sprinkles, upon which rests a tic-tac.
Refall to the sword. Ata.
Ata is an elvish swear word. Elrond turns away as Arwen sits upon the bed wearily, a book held open in her hands. Her breathing hastens, and the book falls to the ground. Elrond walks over to Arwen, concerned, and picks up the book from the ground. Unbelievable! He looks down into Arwen's hands and takes them into his own. He then puts his hands forcefully on her head.
I must now know how to find Zaya. You are the key. Tell me the codes. You know why I want you to leave?
Arwen, quite confused.
Why?
It's the smell. I seem to be infected by it.
Arwen begins to chant.
Nino Hithaglir Lasto.
Fine, I'll get them sooner or later.
He proceeds once again to feel her hands.
Your hands are cold. The life of the Eldar is leaving you.
Arwen, quite sarcastically.
Gee, you're smart.
Arwen and her father look at each other, then look away, then look again, and look away. Then they laugh, and look again. Arwen, now whispering. Arwen, we are not going through this again. I am trying to run a seamless reading of this screenplay.
This was my choice.
Thank you. Elrond's eyes moisten. And it begins to rain as Arwen continues.
Ada, whether by your will or not, there is no ship now that can bear me hence to a suitable prison. Does it really matter that I ate Glorfindel? We all make mistakes.
In the twilight, Elrond walks in Rivendell. He watches as sparks flicker in the distance, where two elves take it in turn to beat the shards of Narsil into a single blade. After 6 hours, he is becoming impatient and goes online and decides to purchase it with his senior elf discount. You have reached the end of part one of this screenplay. I hope you will return to the next part. Part two. I don't need help. I just need a throat lozenge.
Thank you for listening. We will see you in the next episode. Toodaloo.